This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, welcome to The Bigger Picture. You're about to hear an edited recording of the webinar titled Teachers, Critical Components in Education. So this was the seventh and final webinar, which focused on Malaysia's education challenges and the implementation, or lack thereof, of the Malaysian Education Blueprint. So the series was a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. This particular webinar was hosted by Chako Vadaketh and featured guests Samuel Isaiah, the Programme Director of Pemimpin GSL, Fika Roslan, a representative from Tiada.Guru, and Vel Mohan Rangasamy, the Deputy Secretary General of NUTP Malaysia.
Let's start by maybe asking each of you what might be one of the two most important issues in education today. Mohan, do you want to start off?
What we can see is today, teaching has taken a new place. And from normal teaching, teachers today has moved on from more normal teaching that is face-to-face. We have gone into online teaching method. So this is a big change for the teachers and the students because we are not used to it, and this is something new. And our teachers are not trained to do this online teaching. And the teachers, what they did is they learned themselves from the Google, YouTube. It is something like own self-assessed learning.
Yeah. Amon, if I could interrupt you. So you think the issue of virtual teaching is the most important issue facing teachers today?
Yes.
True. We'll come back to that, but I'd like to ask Fika, what do you think is two of the most important issues facing teachers today?
Firstly, I think this pandemic has shed more light on a lot of the gaps in our education system. And I think one of those gaps is, it has made it more obvious that a blanket policy or a one-size-fits-all solution does not work, unfortunately, because there are a lot of different pockets of society. Each classroom will have a different and unique requirement compared to, you know, their counterparts in other districts, for example. Okay, firstly, one of the most crucial issues, I think, is to empower teachers to be able to plan their own lessons according to the needs, the specific needs of their students, because okay, they know better the reality of the day-in and day-out reality of the students. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you, Fika. And over to you, Samuel. What do you think are the two most important issues?
I think the pandemic has certainly taken its toll on education. Initially, we were dealing with lots of learning loss. We were looking at how it has severely affected kids in rural and underprivileged communities. Now we are looking at recovery learning. How do we recover from all that? So I would love to agree with what Fika just said. I think one of the main things that we need to talk about is the urgent need for contextualized solutions that are specifically catered for different types of students and different kinds of teachers and needs in different communities as well. And also with what Mr. Mohan said about teacher professional development, how do we move on, what changes that we can make, what we have learned from the pandemic, and how can we actually create that culture of wanting to continually improve among teachers. So those are the two areas that I'd like to talk about.
Professional development. So I think the pandemic is a big issue that we're all grappling with. So Mr. Mohan, you wanted to talk about that, right? The virtual learning situation and how teachers have to deal with that. What is the current situation and what do you think we should do to move forward?
I think, the teachers, what we are facing the problem is the students are not ready with this online learning. And also a lot of students, they do not have the internet facilities at home. So online teaching, the most important thing is internet. So we had a lot of, teachers are facing a lot of problem to impart the knowledge, the education. So what we do is, some teachers, what they do is, they prepare modules for the students. So the students who cannot come face-to-face online, they are being provided with modules. So teachers are also teaching online and they also preparing modules to reach the children's, to give the children's, so that they don't miss their lesson. And then one more thing, what we can see is a lot of students, they don't have the electronic gadgets like a laptop, computer, smartphone. That is another big issue, big problem. So if all the students have the computer and the internet, then this online education can just go on smoothly. So this is one big problem that we have to, in future, we have to come with another better solution for this.
Okay. Fika, okay. I think in Sabah in particular, I think that's as an acute problem. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. We don't even have to talk about rural interior students. Even in areas that are just 15 to 20 minutes away from Kota Kinabalu City itself, there are internet connectivity issues. And there have been heartbreaking reports of students injuring themselves, threatening their lives just to get internet connection because they so desperately want to follow their lessons. So as much as, you know, we would like to adapt to the pandemic in and turning to technology for this, we also have to acknowledge that there are a lot of, you know, there are different lived realities for a lot of communities, and there has to be a way that enables the students to still continue with their lessons without having to rely so much on technology and internet, because the sad reality is there are just so many communities that do not have access to this. And if we were to wait for these things to, for them, for these amenities to be available to them, I don't think that's fair, because they would have missed out on so much already. So there has to be a way for these students to, you know, still be able to attend lessons. And what Mr. Mohan said is a very good alternative for that, teachers preparing modules. But of course, then we would also have to take into consideration the strain that is experienced by the teachers, because, you know, they would have to think critically on how they can still engage with their students in the learning process. Yeah.
Thank you, Fika. And that issue about teachers coming in and preparing modules, there's a question from Malik Ali to Mr. Mohan. Would you support teachers coming into schools during school holidays to prepare lesson plans for the upcoming term? Would you support that, or would the NUTP support that?
So this one, you see, teachers during this pandemic, the modules that they prepare, all the lessons that they prepare from at home. And then what they do is they just send it to the school office, and the school office will prepare everything and put at the card room. This is for the safety of the teachers, safety of the students. So,
okay, because of COVID and lockdown,
yes,
and all
yes,
that.
Yes,
but
yes.
Assuming there isn't those restrictions, and hopefully we're coming out of that now, would teachers be? Would you encourage teachers to go into school during school holidays?
No, NUTP has already requested to the KPN leave alone the teachers during school holidays.
Samuel, any comments on that?
Yeah, I think to that question, I would say the teachers are already doing that. You know, I've never experienced a holiday when I was completely on holiday, even before the pandemic itself. And I've seen a lot of teachers right now already doing it, you know, preparing for strategies, making sure the classrooms are SOP compliant. And I think the common perception of what teaching is, it's just, you know, an individual goes into the class, gets it done, and that's it. But a lot of times, in a lot of our work, it's about preparing for those lessons themselves. So for these interventions and all that, for in the example of that question, we have been actually doing it already. So it's not a matter of whether we should be doing it more, but how efficient are we actually conducting it? And whether these interventions or whatever planning that we're doing, be it modules and all that, is it actually working? Is it actually targeting the needs of the community? I think those are more relevant questions. Because are teachers actually working hard? Yes. Are teachers actually working more than the 7-8 hours that they're supposed to be doing? Yes. So yes, it's all already happening.
All right. So Samuel, just following on from what Fika had said, that, you know, there are many children who don't have access to even the internet, let alone devices. Mm. What can they do? What can we give them to help them get on with their education?
If I'm going to give you an honest answer to that, I think it's just totally ridiculous that we have been so engrossed with technology, everything, you know, we're looking at this technology, that application. And if I'm looking at my kids in the Orang Asli school that I used to teach, it just doesn't make sense. So without that infrastructure, learning just does not happen at all. And I was looking at certain recommendations, certain policies. It seems to be like, you know, we are just going to let the school deal with it. You guys can come up with any sort of intervention that you want. It could be modules, but there's no follow-up. There's no proper assessment strategies. It's not sustainable. We are not engaging with the communities better. There's no system to support the parents. If you're looking at underprivileged communities compared to urban communities, the parents are probably undereducated, so they can't support their kids at home. So what are we doing for that? So it's, I mean, at times it feels to me that, you know, we misuse the word autonomy. It's like, let's have the school decide whatever they want to do, but we neglect that we need to give them the necessary support as well. It could be in the form of infrastructure, it could be in the form of assessment, it could be in the form of planning and many other forms of support. So I think throughout this pandemic period, we have been too focused on one way of doing it, which is technology, and we are ignoring the fact that kids in Sabah and Sarawak in rural areas as well do not have access to this infrastructure. So that really disheartens me. I'm really unhappy with that.
Okay. Fika, just we've talked about internet, we've talked about devices, but you're from the Adaguru. So even if the kids have all that, if there's no guru there, what can they do? Is that still a major problem, you think, the absentee teachers?
Definitely. And again, it's a very heartbreaking reality because, you know, from these students who don't even have access to the technology and digital infrastructure, they are so eager to continue with their lessons. And I guess, even before this whole COVID situation and the whole case that inspired the Tera Guru campaign itself, the student was just so eager to learn, but the teacher was nowhere to be found, did not attend lessons. And so she decided, you know what, this is not, you know, this shouldn't be happening and something needs to be done about it. So I think accountability is something that is really important. Teachers need to be held accountable. And we at Tera Guru believe that in order to do that, the best people to keep teachers accountable are their peers and colleagues themselves. Because, you know, it would be great if the students are empowered to keep their teachers accountable, which is what is happening in Kota Belud. But obviously, we would also have to factor in the power imbalance. And unfortunately, these students who have stood up against their teachers have been subjected to a lot of harassment and they are just not safe. They're not protected. So that's why we strongly advocate for whistleblower protection in order to give confidence to students as well as teachers to keep themselves in check, to keep their peers and their colleagues in check in order to uphold the integrity and the quality of education for students.
And Fika, the teacher couldn't have gotten away with it, or these teachers, it seems to be a systemic problem, particularly in Sabah, but you were telling me it's also a problem elsewhere, but they couldn't have gotten away with it if there wasn't collusion by the authorities.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why something else that we at the Tera Guru campaign would love to shed more light on is the problem, the issue of corruption in education. So when we hear the word corruption, we're used to thinking, oh, like under table money, offering, I guess, like material things, corruption in the form of tangible things. But unfortunately, in education, although, you know, I cannot confirm or deny that those forms of corruption do happen, but the MACC, the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission Act, also stipulates that corruption can also happen in the form of protection or guarantee that the individual who is reported against, you know, is guaranteed protection. So in this case, this kind of, because the teacher in question in this particular case did not attend class for almost the entire teaching year. And then years later, it turns out that, you know, apparently he still hasn't learned his lesson because another group of students sued him, took him to court again.
So he's still teaching.
Things,
he's still teaching?
I believe he's been transferred from that school, but that's another problem. See, and that is also another form of protection, because we identify these problems in the education system, but where are the repercussions for teacher misconduct? Because they are only transferred to other schools, maybe other departments, and you're only transferring the problem. You're not solving it. So, okay. And this kind of thing definitely does not happen, you know, if it's just caused by one person. Decades-long corruption does not happen just because of one person. So,
we have a question on Facebook from Malik Ali. What is the NUTP's view of absentee teachers? Should they be held accountable? Example, disciplinary action, as Fika suggests. Mohan? What is the NUTP's views on this?
NUTP and also the KPM, we are thinking that, you know, we have to consider the teachers who have long service. Normally, we see the teachers who have been serving for so long, and then maybe about 15, 20 years. After that, maybe they have some problem. Some kind of problem, family problem, mental problem, or whatever. So normally the action, the KPM and the department will look into the problem. And then we have counselors for teachers. And then the counselors will go, like what Samuel told earlier, we have a few stages that they have to go. So the action will be taken where counselors will come in and slowly talk to the teachers concerned and find out what is their problem. And they will be sent for some motivational and give them a chance to reform. So we can't just immediately sack them or take action.
No, of course, it must be investigated.
Yeah, it must be investigated.
But what about teachers who, Afika, are the teachers that are absent? Do they have personal problems, or what is the main cause for them to be absent?
My point of reference is the case that inspired our campaign. So I cannot speak for all similar situations, because again, the circumstances might be different from a case-to-case basis. But in this particular case, the teacher was in school. So he came to school, just did not attend class, did not enter the class. So okay. Of course, As Mr. Mohan said, there are procedures and processes that, you know, facilitate these sorts of investigations. But how effective are these methods? Because apparently, I mean, if the same teacher can be sued 2 years later by another group of students for the same alleged misconduct, how effective are these procedures? So, and I think we need to take into consideration power imbalance as well, because students are vulnerable. They do not have the protection of MOE like teachers do. And as Samuel said earlier, what is happening are in underserved and marginalized communities. So it's easy to take advantage of them. And unfortunately, irresponsible individuals know this. So what kind of protection are we offering the students? Yeah.
Okay, so Samuel, perhaps you can elaborate a little bit about this. There's a question, YouTube question from Datin Azima. How effective is the exit policy?
Right, I think first of all, if we are generally talking about this issue, I think NUTP, teachers, schools, organizations, the Ministry of Education, I think we all should collectively acknowledge that this is a problem. And that this is a serious problem. I think that will be the first step ever. For me, if someone says that a teacher is underperforming or teacher is taking advantage of something, it's not doing that, I take that very seriously. And I believe systematically we are not taking this serious enough. And why is it serious? Because the effects are going to be very, very severe. And that is why I think the exit policy can definitely improve. How? I think it has to be more transparent. A lot of times we don't really know what's going on. At what stage is this particular teacher at? Have we seen what are the effects of these counselling methods? Has it improved? Is there data to show that counselling actually helps these teachers to be better teachers in schools and all that? We have no idea what goes on. And I also think we need to acknowledge this issue as seeing that what kind of effects that it can bring, not just now, but to future generations as well. I think those group of students that Fika mentioned about, I think they would have 2 years of their life in school. That is huge. That's a huge amount of what they have missed and what could have been if they had a better teacher in that place. And if we are looking at it from that perspective alone, I think better measures and more stricter actions need to be taken towards these teachers. Because I believe as critical components of education, I think this is the theme of our topic here, as critical components of education, teachers should be accountable for the things that they do well. At the same time, they should be accountable for the things that they don't do well as well. And for their wrongdoings, and I also believe that a lot of times teachers feel that they are under attack. The whole society, everyone in society is attacking teachers and all that. So I believe that the shoulder, the responsibility should not go to individual teachers alone, but it should be taken by organizations like NEPP, like the Ministry of Education as well, and say and acknowledge that we will do better for the children of Malaysia. So yes, the exit policy can definitely improve, and I think it needs more transparency, but it all comes to the point that are we acknowledging that this is a serious problem for our kids? And unfortunately, in my opinion, we are not.
You are listening to an edited recording of the 7th episode from our education webinar series titled Teachers, Critical Components in Education. And this was a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. We'll be back shortly on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. You're listening to an edited recording of the 7th and final episode from our education webinar series. And this was a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. So this episode was all about teachers being critical components in education. Here's more from that conversation featuring host Chaco Varaketh and our featured guests, Samuel Isaiah, the program director of Pemimpin GSL, Fika Ruslan, a representative from Theatre.Guru, and Vail Mohan Rangasamy, the Deputy Secretary General of NUTP Malaysia.
Well, let's move on. I think we're talking about bad teachers, but I think we all know that teachers are very dedicated, and particularly with COVID, they've been going out of their way, paying for devices, for internet, assisting kids to be able to continue learning. And Samuel, you were talking about rewarding teachers who are good. And what is the best way to do that? And are they being rewarded, the teachers who are being effective?
I think it comes to a certain point of time where a lot of teachers question, are they developing in their career enough? Are they given more responsibilities? Are they given the opportunities to be leaders in the organization? Are they given the opportunities to go out, reach out to the community? So I feel, you know, as a young teacher myself, I've been in the profession for almost 10 years, but Mr. Mohan might agree to this, that in the teaching space, 10 years as a teacher means you're still a junior, you're not senior enough. And for me, I think that hinders a lot of teachers to actually shine, to actually produce the best that they can, to actually come up with better interventions to solve community problems together with the kids and the school. So I feel that for us to, I think one of the easiest things that we can do right now is actually look at how are we promoting quicker professional development for our teachers in Malaysia. How are they going up the ladder? Are we giving them enough to actually explore themselves? Are we giving them enough to actually become better teachers? It's not just about courses online. It's not just about Zoom sessions. Are we giving them solid incentives to do better what they're doing? You know, there's this saying in Bahasa Melayu which says, Guru umpama lilin membakar diri. It kind of shows that we are expecting teachers to be selfless at all times, you know, without having to consider other aspects as well. And that's why I feel more and more support needs to be given to teachers to develop themselves and also, you know, a better pay. I think definitely teachers need to be paid more. A lot of teacher friends that I know, especially for the COVID-19, know they've got to buy papers when they create the modules. They do it themselves. They need to buy printers, the ink. Everything is on their own. It comes from their own resources. So I think more assistance in that sense is also very necessary for teachers who are doing really well. And last but not least, I think kudos to the Ministry of Education. A few years ago, they launched competitions, you know, like Guru Adiwira or Guru PAK 21 to celebrate teachers who are actually doing really well, to shine the spotlight on them, to show that Malaysian teachers are capable. If you're also looking at the Global Teacher Prize, almost every year we have had one teacher from Malaysia be a top 50 finalist on an international stage. This means that we've got very good teachers. But I think the question here also shows that how are we replicating these teachers? How do we ensure that these teachers, you know, it's just not one teacher, it's not just Samuel, it's just not the other teachers. How do we create more of similar individuals? And how can we give them the incentives? How can we build on their passion? And how we can encourage them to develop and stay in this career? I think these are questions that we need to answer together.
Okay. Fika, do you have anything to say about that, about rewarding teachers and allowing them to shine?
You know, there's always mixed reactions when talking about the Tiada Guru campaign, because we are blowing the whistle on decades-long corruption, teacher misconduct. And of course, there's a part of, you know, there's a portion of society that's like, why are you painting teachers in a bad light? But then again, you have to think of all the good teachers who are genuinely so invested and passionate in this profession. And this is for them as well, because it's not fair that they are shouldering so much of the responsibility and delivering as they should. But then there are other teachers who are unfortunately irresponsible and are sullying the good name of teachers. And I mean, you know, I also have teacher friends who are disheartened by the education system because they do not feel empowered to truly educate their students enough, because they have to be by the book. There are rules and restrictions that they have to adhere to, and they are not given much creative space to not just, you know, teach students out of the book, but to give them practical knowledge, like truly not just information, but knowledge that they could apply in their lives. So going back to my initial point of empowering teachers, while, you know, autonomy does exist for these teachers to plan their lessons the way they see fit for their students, but is it enough? And based on our observations from the ground, our feedback from the teachers that we work with, it's not encouraging enough for them. Yeah,
Mr. Mohan, what do you have to say? Caesar on Facebook says, is the promotion policy of teachers an issue that needs to be addressed? Has this become a political issue?
Actually, teachers are our scope of promotion. Everybody can go on promotion, and then when the time comes, like now, NATP, through NATP, we have a system, we call it time-based promotion. So when the teachers, as they are teaching, after about 8 years after teaching, they can go to the next category. So it is an automatic promotion. And then teachers who like to move on, they are given the freedom. Once they like to go on a promotion, they can apply. There's a course, they call it NPQL, where the particular teachers are being trained to become a leader. So they can become a principal, headmaster, and also. So there are a lot of scope. And we also have many new promotion in PPD and JPN.
So this is based on merit, is it, as opposed to just
time spent in service? Yeah, this is time spent and also how they perform. So they have to, the teacher, the principal will value them on their mark. They are given certain marks on their performance before they given the promotion, yes.
All right, Samuel, you were talking about this when we had a chat yesterday, that there could be outstanding teachers who have the potential to become leaders in education, but you felt that they didn't have opportunities to become leaders despite having the qualities and capabilities.
Yeah, I think there are outlets for teachers to actually, you know, progress career-wise. But I think as Mr. Mohan mentioned, it's mostly very time-based. We are not promoting teachers to actually go on it based on merit and merit alone. There's also a distinction between certain areas whereby, you know, if you're a teacher teaching English, for example, now you're not allowed to study policy. Things like that. So there are restrictions. I understand the reasons behind these policies and these restrictions. But as you restrict good teachers and you restrict passionate teachers, I think eventually they lose that desire. And as we were speaking yesterday, I think teaching is actually a combination of heart, a combination of passion, and at the same time, very high skills. So you can't have one over the other. When you have very, very passionate teachers and and they don't have the skills, it doesn't work. If they have skills and they have passion, it works really well. So I think we need to be able to identify these sort of teachers, you know, teachers who actually shine, teachers who actually are different than the rest, and give them the opportunity, like Fika mentioned, the autonomy, the support to actually make changes in different ways and different methods as well. So I think though there is a system for us to progress, I think it can be severely improved. Mr. Mohan also mentioned about the MPQEL of how teachers can become school leaders and principals, but it takes a long time, too long for a teacher.
How long an average for a teacher to,
if there's an outstanding teacher? Please don't quote me, but I think it could be about at least 15 to 20 years for an individual to eventually become a headmaster or a principal. So that's too long, in my opinion. In other countries, in more advanced countries, even as young as 30 or younger than that, you know, you've got the passion, you've got the skills, you've proven yourself, you've got the merit, you can apply to be a school leader. And I'm like, why not? Why can't we have this in Malaysia? So I think it's always a question of why not? Why can't we fire teachers who just don't perform over and over there? Why not? I think if we try to keep it as simple as possible, if the effects are detrimental, and if we see that, you know, we have the opportunity to promote someone who can do a better job, why not? Why don't we do it?
Is this something the NUTP would advocate for, Mr. Mohan? You were saying there are avenues for teachers to be promoted, but does it take 10 to 15 years for average
Now, yes, now what they have this, as I told you about the NPQL, so the teachers who are interested, they can apply. So they will be called for a kind of test and an interview. If the department feels that they are qualified, so now they take them and they send them for a NPQL program where they have to sit for an exam, they have to perform. And if they find them, they are really good, they can become a principal even at the earlier stage.
Like even what before 10 years.
Yes. So it depends. They have to go through the course interview, and they have to do a lot of presentation and prove that they are very capable.
Okay. Fika, you had said that something that you want to advocate for is an independent ombudsman to look at how teachers are functioning. Why do you say that?
Because based on track record, internal investigations have not produced encouraging results. And any dependency on internal investigations, in our opinion, is a recipe for reform disaster. Honest public servants like teachers are desperately waiting for independent oversight. So something that we recently participated in the CSO platform for reform, Rakyat Manifesto proposal was for to push beyond just forming an IPCMC of sorts, like for public servants. So it's not just one ministry, agency or politician, but setting in place an empowered and robust integrity structure for the whole government under the aegis of the public ombudsman. So then they would become the central hub for all misconduct and corruption claims. I guess ideally, do away with internal investigative and integrity departments, because again, this gives way to collusion and protection. You know, they, rather than acknowledging the problem, unfortunately, these institutions are more invested in protecting jaga air muka or preserving their image. So that's
are there examples of other countries which have independent ombudsmen for teachers?
For teachers specifically, I don't have an example on hand, but
certainly banking and insurance and things, there are examples.
So, but you know, it's something that hopefully can be considered for Malaysia, and hopefully this then can preserve not only the quality of education, but then the quality of teachers as well.
Mr. Mohan, is there anything you would like to add to that?
Yeah, I think that is a good idea. They should come up with one organization, whoever from the department who can look into this matter. So it will solve a lot of problems.
That's good to know. That's something perhaps NUTP and Tiada Guru can work together to promote or to advocate for. Mr. Mohan, just from teachers that I know, many of them are having to take money out of their own pocket to paint their classrooms or repair cupboard doors and things. I mean, that's shocking in a country like Malaysia. What are your thoughts on that?
Nowadays the schools, they come up with a lot of programs. They have to beautify the class and all that. So since there is not much of money in the school, so the teachers are so willingly, they try to pocket out their own money and they beautify the classroom, they paint the classroom very willingly. No teachers were forced to do that. But why
do teachers have to do that? I mean, if there's 50.4 billion ringgit going in, why do teachers... teachers, as Samuel said, the pay is not fantastic. So why do they have to still take money out of their pocket to do this? I know the bulk of this money goes for emoluments, right? To pay for the teachers and other staff. But there still should be enough for basic infrastructure and facilities.
Yeah, actually, you see, the painting job, the major expenditures are actually provided by the department. The administrator can always apply to the PPD, JPN, and they send their budget for the repair. And I've seen many schools recently. I visited a few schools. They have already applied and they got their budget to repair and to beautify the school, paint the school, change the roof and everything. From what I can see, very rare cases, some places, like what Fika is telling, maybe there are some rare cases it does happen. So generally, I think it's okay.
Thank you, Mohan. But you were saying that what you would want is for every kid to have a device, for there to be perfect internet and so on. So how can we move from where we are now, where even basic infrastructure is perhaps not in existence in some schools, to where we can have kids with devices and things? And we're already spending 50.4 billion. Where's the money going to come from that?
Yeah. So what we are doing now here, like when there was a problem with the pandemic, NUTP had a collaboration program with this YTL communication. So what we did was we provided a lot of smartphone to so many students.
How many students do you know?
We have to divide that to a few, all over the states, a few thousand.
Okay. And how, Fika, what are your views on how can we expand the what's limited resources we have to get schools up to speed and devices and so on?
With all due respect, I don't think it's a problem of limited resources. Because again, as you have rightly pointed out, the education receives one of the highest budgets every year. So that's why, Tiada Guru, we suggested to have the independent third-party audit into the MOE's finances. The MACC themselves have called the MOE a serious high-risk ministry for corruption. And while the YTL initiative was good, I guess, like the idea was there, but how many cases of exploding phones did we see and did we hear about that were reported? And those were only the ones that were reported. What about others that, did not come to light? It's something, there is something wrong somewhere that, there are still schools in such terrible states. Hopefully this third-party auditing can be done into the finances. And again, make the document accessible to public. Transparency is of utmost importance here. Because again, it goes back to the students. And this is the future of our country. What are we doing to ourselves that we are not providing students with the kind of education that they should receive? So
on that topic, we have a comment or question from Haley Trenchard, who says one-off programs to upskill teachers are less effective. And I would say that one-off programs for distributing devices are less effective than there has to be a continuous program to enable this. And so Haley says, if they're not combined with a school culture of openness, so transparency comes back again, feedback and constant improvement. Are teacher appraisals rewarding and acknowledging lifelong learning? Samuel, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think fundamentally it goes back to how an individual or how a teacher views education and teaching. What are their principles of education? It's vastly different from one teacher to another. For example, for me, learning has to be communicative. It has to encourage problem solving. It has to be in an environment where students are safe. They feel safe to voice out their opinions. They feel safe to voice out their criticality. They can fail, they can try, they can enjoy, and they can engage in the session, in the lesson, sorry. But for some teachers, their idea of teaching and learning is drilling. Very one-way communication. I'm going to come in with a book. I'm going to make some copies of it. I'm going to make you answer those questions, and we're going to discuss the questions together. And that is teaching and learning. So fundamentally, I think there are differences in principles of what education and teaching and learning really is. So that is why a lot of these one-off programs don't work, because the culture is not there. The beliefs are not aligned. The principles are not aligned. And I think we need to look back at this. What kind of principles? Because we can adapt systems from great countries, from Singapore, from Finland and whatever. But if our principles are not aligned to their culture, it's not aligned to their beliefs, it's just not going to work. And I think the point is very fair. Are teacher appraisals rewarding and acknowledging lifelong learning? Is this something that we see? We mentioned yesterday about continuous professional development. And I mentioned a statistics that only about 8% of teachers are actually actively looking for professional development. So that shows that we as ourselves are not critical of our own practice in the classroom. We ourselves are not reflective of what we can do and what we can't do and areas that we need to improve on. What more would our students learn from us? Because, you know, teaching and learning is not so much about, you know, completing the syllabus or teaching them a book or something. It is that relationship. Your students learn from you. Your students learn from your actions and what you do. So if you are an individual who believes that communication, working together, being collaborative with one another is a form of teaching and learning, they themselves will make learning something that's meaningful to them. It's not just about what we say, it's about actually what we do in the classroom. So it's the culture that matters the most and the principles of educators that we need to address.
Mohan, do you want to add on to that? What is the NUTP doing about improving upskilling teachers, that there is a continuous program for that? And what kind of appraisals do teachers get?
NUTP itself, during the holidays and all, they conduct so many courses for the teachers, you see, on our own expense. So we give them the program on all aspects. So like this coming holiday, we are conducting a ICT program for so many teachers, especially the younger ones. So we, from time to time, we have a lot of program that NUTP does. But I think the KPM also must do a lot of program. So upscaling program for teachers.
It must be part of the system, right? As I think we all agree that these one-off programs are really not so effective. And that might be, I think, the overriding theme over these webinars has been the Malaysian Education Blueprint is a fantastic document, but the implementation of it has been a major problem. And culture and changing culture seems to be one of the key factors in enabling the blueprint to be implemented properly.
Chako, if I may add on, I think it's due to the lack of representation from teachers as well. I think teachers need to be at the forefront of these policy decisions. A lot of times they're not involved. They are probably involved as tokens, you know, like, I'm going to send you a survey, you're going to fill it up, but they are not actively involved in these policy decisions? Where are the school leaders when these policies are made? Where are the provocative or the critical teachers when these policies are made? So I hope that there is better engagement, more communication with teachers on the ground who are giving their all, who are painting the classroom, painting the tables, fixing this, doing this, coming up with great means of education for our students, and let them have a voice at the very top.
A question from Shanaz Al-Sadat. 80% of the budget goes to the salary of education officers and teachers. We don't feel there are excess teachers. In fact, additional investment should be made to support them. So where is the fat? So do we need more money for education, or do we need to streamline teaching? Maybe Fika, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, again, you know, I stand by my answer earlier. There must be something, you know, awry somewhere that a 60... like billions of ringgit in funds are where we don't see the results, you know? So again, transparency. Yeah, transparency.
Okay. That's a recurring theme.
See, we all have these questions, right? Where is the Fed? Yeah. So and we keep asking these questions because we don't have the information. It's not made available to us. So it's only fair that we be informed of these things.
Is that something that you're looking into at all in your organization, GSL, Samuel, about where's all this money going?
Not really. We're actually very much focused on empowering school leaders, and we're looking at it from the perspective that excellent schools start with excellent leaders. So a lot of our programs are actually focused on school leaders coming up with contextualized, localized solutions to improve student outcomes. So that is actually the focus of what we're doing, not so much of the budget, unfortunately.
Okay. But you need to enable for the leaders to function properly. They need to have the support and the financial support and equipment.
Yeah, Chako, I think if I can just reflect on my experience, I think a few years ago when the Ministry of Education made sure that all classrooms had the LCD projectors, lots of money went to it, the infrastructure was great, you know, they tried to, I think it was the One Bistari program and all that, so everything was good. But what I saw was, are teachers equipped enough to actually use these infrastructures given to them to the best of the capacity? So I think this is the area that Pemimpin JSL is looking at. With limited resources, one of the Global Teacher Prize finalists and one of the winners from Africa, very limited resources, but he did outstanding things. So it comes to what kind of processes are you doing? What kind of reflective practices are you practicing in the classroom? Yes, technological devices and infrastructures are important, but they are tools. You know, you can have great tools, but a bad system, bad practices in schools, it doesn't work as well. So I think in Pemimpin JSL, we are focusing more on the process of how to actually improve student outcomes by improving that process in schools. And I think that's very important.
So it's the teacher, at the end of the day, begins and ends with the teacher.
The individual, yes.
Yes.
The individual.
Okay, I think we're running out of time. So Mohan, any last thoughts before we wind up?
So I think for the improvement of the whole education system, it has to be a good collaboration between education and other NGO body, or they should come together and come up with a very improved system for our future education.
Fika, any last thoughts?
As a product of the Malaysian education system, I am blessed that I have had incredible teachers who have shaped the person that I am. And they did not just equip me with information or education, but they have imparted so much more values in me that I carry with me every day. So yes, it begins and ends with the teacher. Because, you know, as Samuel has said, I think like throughout this webinar, even with limited resources, teachers can do incredible things. I mean, it doesn't even have to be big, flashy things. It just has to be something that makes an impact in the students' lives. So I just hope that, you know, these teachers are recognized, they are empowered, and they are supported to maintain the integrity and the quality of education for a better Malaysia.
Thank you, Fika. And last few words, Samuel.
Right. I would like to resonate what Mr. Mohan said. I think we need to collaborate. A lot of times we love working in silos. We love working alone. Organizations do their own thing. Schools do their own thing. Teachers do their own thing. But I think it's time that we all come together. And the pandemic has shown that when we come together, I think we can give the best for kids, can be the best for society. So yeah, better collaboration. That would be the last words.
You just heard an edited recording of our 7th education webinar, which explored the critical role teachers play in education. Do catch the full webinar at facebook.com/BFM Radio. This webinar series was presented by BFM Media, Edunity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.